What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Andy Hart, Ted Johnson, Nick Fitzy Stevens here for WEEI Afternoons at the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Telethon at Fenway Park. And the thing that I find interesting, guys, is every guest we have is more impressive than the last. And talking off air to our next guest, I think this will hold true. Kevin Martin Jr., 62, is a prostate cancer patient from Milton. And his doctor, Dr. Atish Choudhury from Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Welcome, guys. And Kevin, we were talking to you a little bit about your journey and where you've come from and what you are now. And what you are now is a legitimate marathon runner. And tell us a little bit about how that's kind of played a role through your whole journey here.
The funny thing is for my 60th birthday, I wanted to run Boston. I grew up in Southie, kind of on the outskirts of the finish line, and it was kind of a bucket list item.
Yep.
And I was welcomed with open arms from on the Dana-Farber team. And literally a month to the day after being invited on the team, I get diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer. So the journey started as, from a marathon perspective, is a bucket list.
Right.
And then it became so much bigger than that. So after lots of tears and falling down and brushing myself off, I very much have become part of the Dana-Farber family, run the marathon for Dana-Farber. This past year raised $130,000.
Way to go.
That's incredible.
Just, I believe in Dana-Farber so much. I am Jimmy. You are Jimmy. We're all Jimmy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, we believe in science, and we believe in the incredible advances that the Dana-Farber Institute and Jimmy Fund help provide. But, you know, every now and again, I also believe in karma. And it's amazing that in a lot of ways, like, that you're now being treated by and helped out by the people that you were running for, in spite of the fact that you were thrown this incredible curveball and dealt this blow out of nowhere.
Everything happens for a reason.
Agreed.
And I would never want to have cancer, but I live with gratitude. I live with joy in my heart. I try to inspire people every day, so I do believe there's a purpose in this. And Dr. Choudhury can tell you, but I'm kind of outperforming right now. There's certain things that I do that maybe, perhaps, another person can't do. So I really try to, when I run, when I do triathlons, when I give talks, I'm going to Kilimanjaro in September with a bunch of endurance athletes to show that people with advanced cancer can thrive and not just survive. And I really feel that I've got this purpose of awareness, prostate cancer, other types of cancers, but really that it is a journey, and we push ourselves forward, and we climb mountains, and we run marathons, and we all run different types of races.
Have you found that the running and the exercise, it's you can't imagine not doing it now. It's your salvation in a way. It's just part of your lifestyle, who you are now.
Dr. Choudhury tells me I have no testosterone. I would tell you I've got lots of testosterone.
For you.
Yeah. I mean, when I run by myself, I meditate, I pray, I listen to the Rolling Stones. And when I run with other people, it's a big TMI session of just stories and engagement and motivating each other. So to me, the running on a whole bunch of different levels really helps push my life forward.
Dr. Choudhury, two questions for you. First, in reading the notes, you had shoulder pain, Kevin, and that led to prostate cancer. As just an outsider, that doesn't seem to make sense in my head. And what is the treatment like now that he is a marathoner and dealing with prostate cancer?
Yeah, so actually Kevin has been monitored for prostate cancer for a number of years. And so what we were seeing in our follow-up visits with him was a number that we used to track the progress of the cancer called PSA was making its way upward, but we never really had a diagnosis in the prostate itself of anything other than a low-grade cancer. So it was really the imaging that caught that the cancer had spread to the bone, and now that that's in the news with Joe Biden having the same kind of diagnosis. But the very good news for Kevin and for Joe Biden and for others with prostate cancer in the bone is that the treatments for it are very, very effective. So as Kevin mentioned, the backbone of the treatment is testosterone-lowering medication, and then we add additional hormonal drugs on top of that, and in some cases we add chemotherapy. And many patients have experienced exceptional responses to that, with the PSA numbers going all the way to zero and the scans really looking very, very good. The problem that we deal with is that these medications have a lot of side effects. This lowering the level of testosterone has sexual side effects, as you might be aware, also has impacts on endurance and physical strength and emotions. And we counsel our patients that exercise is really the most critical way to counteract those kinds of side effects. I told Kevin that on the first day, and he took it to the furthest extreme that I could possibly imagine. And he'll tell you that I actually told him on the very first day, I'm not sure that a marathon is on these medications is actually doable. I've not had a patient actually do that, but he took that as a personal challenge. And now he sends me messages over the patient portal, updating me on all his progress, is sort of like, look at that.
Yeah. I mean,
I want to clarify, it's not look at that. I want to be exact in those words. So being from Southie, Goodwill Hunting, every race, I upload a picture and says, how do you like them apples?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
That's awesome.
What are we without, what are we without goals or thinking that we have something to strive for? And this is the second day in a row, by the way, that we've heard how important exercise is. You know, I'm sure certain people probably believe, like, oh, you got to preserve your strength or rest and let the medicine and the treatment work, which is probably true at certain points, but exercise rooms there, telling people to go out, get walks, get fresh air, take care of yourselves. That's incredibly important. And where are we necessarily now in the journey to try to, like, end prostate cancer? Because it feels like we've been on a slow, steady hill up towards getting to the top and, like, eradicating this from, the health and care of men.
Absolutely. So there's two extremes to this. One is to cure prostate cancer, which we're able to cure cancers at a much later stage than we were able to previously. But then the other side of this is to not over-treat what we call indolent cancers, low-grade cancers that will never kill the patient. And so we're trying to be very personalized in our management of the individual patient in front of us. And so every year there's new treatments available for even advanced prostate cancers, even cancers that have become resistant to some of our initial treatments. And so many of our patients, even carrying a quote terminal diagnosis, live for years and years and years and wind up dying of something else.
Kevin, I need to bring attention to, there's a funny balance for you here. So this man, you entrust your life to this man, and yet you also try to prove him wrong at all times. So you trust him in the knowledge of your treatment that he knows exactly what he's doing, but then you prove him wrong by saying, how you like dem apples every time you run.
I've got so much respect for Dr. Chaudhary, and like any cancer, there's a standard of care. And what I so much appreciated about him, in my case, I didn't have chemo. He stepped back from the standard of care and said, hey, the scans look good, the blood looks good, let's continue on a certain path. So I've just got a tremendous amount of respect for him and an appreciation that we're looking at every individual patient with their own situation, and we're treating that person. We're not treating it in a mass situation. And I've just got a tremendous amount of respect for him.
And then you send him the photo of your latest time.
Indeed, I do.
Hey, Doc, when should men start talking to their doctors about potential prostate risks?
Yeah, so there are actually some very good guidelines that are available through many societies, like the American Cancer Society and the American Urologic Association. Generally, the idea is to start screening at age 50, but for people who have a family history of prostate cancer, they might start earlier. So getting an initial PSA level somewhere between 40 and 45, if there is a high risk, will then decide how frequently you should get the PSA checked after that.
And Kevin, if I may, quick two-parter. One, favorite Stones album. And two, how important has it been, the support, the care, the positive environment, the everything else that Jimmy Fund and Dana-Farber have given you? You're obviously doing your part, training, exercising, but how important has their care been for you?
I become part of the family. You know, when I joined the Dana-Farber Marathon team, which was kind of my first into a lot of people, that group is all about hope. And I think more than anything, Dr. Chaudhary, Dana-Farber, we're bottling hope. When we give to strike out cancer, everybody that gives is writing a check out of the hope for a cure, out of the hope for research, raising awareness, advocacy, raising the game. So every $5 matters, but more than anything, we're bottling hope right now for that person. And I like to tell my story. I'm an extrovert, if you can't tell. Some people don't tell their story, but I kind of feel that when I tell my story, I'm potentially the survival guide for the next person who's gotten diagnosed, and they're trying to figure out on page 7, what do I do now? And I just want to call out my wife, Lisa, and my kids and my entire network. I'm just so blessed in all aspects of my life. My marathon coach, I was getting in my head 40 miles a week. He says, go do something else. I took up dance lessons, and I won a regional dance contest a couple of months ago, rumba, tango, foxtrot. Like, I'm just one of those people.
Were you ever this competitive before?
I've always kind of been a type A person. That when someone tells me no, I'm going to take it to the level and
freaking
say, let me
Arthur
show you.
Murray over here. Unbelievable.
Kevin, we appreciate you sharing your journey,
Dr.
Chaudhary, we appreciate your work for Kevin and others. We also appreciate you taking his ribbing, which is an annual thing, as he continues. What was the medal you won? Every marathon, right? All the major marathons. The
Abbott Medal.
The Abbott Medal is the next accomplishment after Kilimanjaro, after everything else. Kevin Martin, Dr. Atish Chaudhary here with WEEI Afternoons. Dan Ball has
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
It's trending. WEEI Afternoons back here at Fenway Park for the Jimmy Fund Telethon. Andy Hart, Ted Johnson, Nick Fitzy Stevens, joined by the Key family right now, Brittany, Ricky, Amelia, and Dylan. Dylan's got his Red Sox jersey on, if you're watching on Twitch or YouTube, rolling around on the floor, having a heck of a time. Brittany, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So reading your story, there's a lot to it, but I want you to try to describe sort of the journey that you've been on in your own words.
Sure. Ta-da. Yeah, so last year I had I was experiencing some blood in my stool, and it was after I had had a procedure in which I was put on a blood thinner, and so they took me off the blood thinner. It resolved, but it kept coming back a little bit, and I had known a little bit about some of the signs of colorectal cancer, and there was just something in the back of my head that thought this could be something. Hey, Amelia, can you? Thank you, sweetheart. Earth, she thinks she's in space. and so I kept at it. I went to my primary care physician. They referred me to a GI doctor. And eventually I got in for the colonoscopy last August. And that is when they found a mass. And I was diagnosed with stage 3 rectal cancer at that time. And that was really where the whirlwind started. I finished treatment this past April. So I'm currently in surveillance, which is amazing. But it was a long road to get there.
And you had had some health issues prior to that as well. So obviously it's been a bumpy decade for you.
It really was. So speaking of Dylan, this crazy little guy here, when I was pregnant with him, I had a stroke just completely out of the blue. I've been otherwise very young and healthy. And had a stroke, and part of that, and trying to figure out what happened, is they realized that I had a hole between the two chambers of my heart. It's actually quite common. It's called the PFO, but it can lead to that blood clot going up to your brain and causing a stroke. And so when I had that closed, that was when they put me on that blood thinner, and that was when I experienced my first issue of the rectal bleeding. And then over time, I started to get a little bit more tired. I was anemic for the first time in my life. I started to experience some heaviness in my pelvic floor. Things just kind of started to stagger and build. And over time, collectively, that starts to signal that something might be wrong.
And Brittany, of course, your husband Ricky is here with you and your two kids. What's I mean, just when you got the news, I mean, you come together as a family and you got these beautiful babies and you say what to each other? How, we gotta find a way to get through this. This is something we have to overcome mm-hmm. as a team, right?
That's right. We were in the car on the way home from the colonoscopy where, you know, we'd got the worst news we've ever had in our life. And I said two things. I'm going to go to Dana-Farber. And, oh, my gosh, we have not taken the kids to Disney yet. Like, those are, you put on the parent hat and you say, oh, my gosh, we haven't done these things. What's going to happen? Why didn't we do that earlier? You just start to catastrophize everything. And you also get into the planning mode where you're trying to figure out where you're going to go and what doctor you're going to see, because there's so many options. And it took me about 2 weeks to figure out where to go and to get all the appointments scheduled. But that was the beginning of it all. I mean, he's been my rock. I mean, he's obviously took on a lot of the parenting responsibilities throughout treatment. And, you know, without him, I wouldn't have been able to dedicate the time that I needed to rest and to be my best self for the kids when I could throughout the treatment. So yeah, he's been amazing.
Ricky, what was that like for you, suddenly had a lot thrown on you? I mean, just raising two young kids as a traditional couple is difficult, never mind what you guys had to go through.
Yeah, I mean, it was overwhelming at first, really scary, a lot of tears, a lot of sad nights. But yeah, I mean, we just kind of got through it. We have a lot of support with our family close by, and both our workplaces were accommodating, so that helped a lot. But yeah, emotionally, we a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, glad to be hopefully on the other side of it for now.
And can you tell us a little bit about the impact that the Jimmy Fund and especially Dana-Farber has had on, you know, providing this family-like environment of immense, constant positivity, especially for like a tight-knit family like yourselves that should be the absolute picture of health, and yet you guys have had to clear so many hurdles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's rare when you're in the healthcare space, especially going through cancer, you don't expect to feel the level of comfort that you do when you're going to Dana-Farber. But just the moment that I met with Dr. Meyerhart, we had our plan figured out. I think that was probably the first time that I slept soundly in the 2 weeks post-diagnosis. Like I always tell people that those first 2 weeks where you don't really know what's going on, you're not sure what stage you're at, you're doing some more testing, it's really hard to figure out what's going on. But once you have that plan, we just both had such a sigh of relief, and I knew that I would be going through treatment and it was going to be a journey, but I felt so protected and there were so many programs. And I remember going to Brigham and Women's for my surgeon, you know, evaluation, because my surgery was first in my first line of treatment, and the research advisor for the Young Onset Colorectal Cancer Center came over and she gave me the pamphlet around, you know, all the research that's happening within Dana-Farber, which is incredible, because I'm, you know, I represent a lot of patients who are not typical for colorectal cancer, and all of the programs of learning kind of how to parent through cancer. There's a lot of great online programs that are offered, and I was able to meet some other young adults who have cancer as well that are being treated by Dana-Farber. So you really do feel like you're a part of a community, and you can take advantage of whatever resource you need in any given moment. And everyone's just so friendly when you walk in the door. It's incredible, from the reception to parking all the way, you know, to the doctors that you engage with every day.
I feel like there's a little bit of a reoccurring theme, at least for today's guest, but you guys both look like you're very, very fit, and it says you're a big CrossFit. I used to be, and then the injury started piling up, but
yeah,
you like to lift. I still lift mm-hmm. still, but that is kind of a foundation for your everyday life, is working out, lifting.
Absolutely. And I think it what allowed me to get through this treatment was really hard, but I think, you know, I remember one of my friends when I was diagnosed, and I told my girlfriends, and they, one of them said, my gosh, of all of us, for you to be the one that got cancer, we're all screwed.
You know, you've always been healthy.
You're so disciplined with your diet and you work out. Like, my gosh, if you could get cancer, like, that's just, it's so scary. And it is the reality. And we don't always think that it is. And you can feel upset about that because you're like, wow, I did everything that I'm told to do, all the guidelines. I have none of the lifestyle risk factors and none of that applies to me, but I still got this. And I had to just change my mindset to say, at least I'm strong enough and I can fight this even more so because of that foundation of health that I have. And so I'm I'm grateful that I dedicate, you know, all of that time and energy to being healthy for my kids and for myself, and to be able to get through this, it will certainly help me in the long run.
And you need it to keep up with Dylan, from what I've seen.
Yeah. Yes, oh, yeah. He's already fallen three times today on our way to Fenway.
So
he's having a
he's also
day.
Done
he's learned.
He's also done
up.
His best too. There was
oh,
a plug back
so
here.
Much.
He was going to unplug. He was going to push a button over there. So if we go off the air, I'm not going to say I'm pointing fingers, but I'm pretty sure who I know which finger to point at. Dylan.
Yep.
Amelia, how are you doing through all this, buddy? Are you doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom and Dad are rock stars, huh?
Yeah.
She was my buddy. She took care of me. I was able to really take all of the rest time that I needed during the day when our family and friends and their school were taking care of them during the day, and I could rest up and then come home, and she would be so gentle with me when I had my surgery, and I would come home from chemo with the pump for 2 days, and you know, they both knew, like, I couldn't pick up Dylan for a couple of days and for a couple of weeks after my surgeries. And, you know, she's always curious about my scar. And I had an ileostomy, so that was a whole thing. You know, kids are very fascinated about bowel habits, as you can imagine. And you start to get very comfortable talking about those things. And I actually think that's part of the challenge, is that, you know, a lot of the symptoms that I experienced and that people experience, they're a bit embarrassing to talk about. It's very taboo. And you just explain them away. And for some people, it ends up, you know, being too late, unfortunately.
Well, it takes the power away. It, you know, it doesn't have as much, I think, power over you when you can share it with people, right?
I think so.
And scars tell stories. Tell your story.
Yeah, I've got plenty of them.
Yeah. And she has to keep up with the kids. And I think Dylan is about ready to go. They're going to the Red Sox tonight, right?
We sure are, yep. We're going to stay for the game. They're going to go hopefully see Wally and get some fun snacks.
Yes.
They're
excited. First inning hot dog, second inning popcorn, third inning you get the sundae and the helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Fourth inning, yep.
Yep, and then Ricky will take them home because they'll be tired, and I'll stick around a little bit and find my way back.
All right, Brittany, the entire Key family, guys, have fun at the game tonight. We appreciate you telling
your
story.
Much.
You have a beautiful family.
Yep.
Have
thank
fun
you
at the game
tonight.
Congratulations, guys.
Thank
appreciate you.
You.
Up next here on WEEI Afternoons is a former Red Sox. We go from a child wearing a Red Sox jersey to a former Red Sox, Derek Lowe. Pitcher will be joining us here momentarily as he gets set up for WEEI Afternoons. Quick update, because the tote board continues to rise. We are, if you're watching on Twitch, you can see a little bit there, but $3,925,156. We are on our way. We have about an hour and 20 minutes here on WEEI Afternoons for our goal of $4 million. So please give, please help. We can take small sums, large sums, whatever you could possibly give. Text KCANCER to 56512. Call 1-877-738-1234, or you can go online to thejimmyfund.org. Mr. Lowe, how we doing?
Here we are.
That's yeah, we're great. On. We're ready to go.
Oh, roll right in.
Full speed ahead. Yes, full
Holy
speed ahead.
You got a little ring there. What is that? Was that some
ring.
High school ring?
Yeah.
What is that? What is that?
Are you jealous?
No, I mean, I got it.
Where's yours? Where's yours?
I wasn't going to wear it if, you know,
I
was going to be here, but that's a beautiful ring. That's the 04.
We had our 20-year anniversary here, obviously, last year, and just to see everybody was amazing.
Yeah.
Some of us, we all don't look the same. You know what I mean?
You look pretty good.
Yeah,
you do, man.
Yeah, you're looking.
That's why I wear a vest.
You're high. Looking really
whatever.
Good.
No, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, we saw Trot yesterday. You know, when you saw Veritech, were you like, you ever going to leave this place?
Never. We had dinner. We had dinner at his house with Brianna Wakefield on Thursday. So he's my best friend in all of baseball. We grew up in together in 95, got traded together.
Yep.
Part of the greatest trades in Red Sox history.
He's never leaving this game. Like, right. I mean, he's going to be he's Don Zimmer of our current era.
Did you know that when you were playing with him?
I mean, a little bit, but I didn't. Really, I thought he'd give himself a little grace period to kind of just you know, play golf with the boys. But I know it was an opportunity he couldn't turn down, and I'd imagine at some point he's going to want to manage somewhere. I don't know where it is, but he loves it, and God bless him for doing it.
So, Derek, you obviously had the intimate viewing of the Jimmy Fund, the Red Sox, this relationship, the telethon. How did you come to grips with just how special that relationship
is? Yeah, I mean, I got the C word 25 years ago. I had skin cancer on my nose. So, you know, I went through that whole nothing what a lot of these people are going through, but you still hear the word. There's some
no doubt.
Some frightness in it. But just, yeah, just you get taught at an early age when you play for this organization what this means. And obviously through due time, you get to meet a lot of people. The Red Sox do an amazing job going to the hospital, bringing kids to games, you know, kind of give them a unique opportunity that they normally wouldn't otherwise have.
I was playing for the Pats simultaneously as you were playing for the Red Sox, and that 04 season, man,
yeah.
I just it was incredible to be a fan.
Yeah.
Just what are some of your favorite memories from
best.
That
yeah, it really
that
04 was. Team? And I think it's like obviously what happened in 03 had a lot to do with it. You know, I think everyone thought it was going to be the Red Sox and the Cubs in 03. One of us are going to break the all-time.
Yep.
But that was an incredible ride, though. Like there were some times during that, like the when you guys went out on Monday night to beat the A's. Everybody remembers your signature farewell to the A's.
Yeah, you said goodbye.
That's
interesting.
All. The wild ride. Then 04 just made it even.
Yeah, and it did.
More dramatic.
And for a lot of most fans do realize, you know, we were. I call it treading water halfway through the year. We were almost 500 going into the trading deadline. They made some. Getting rid of Nomar's huge in the city. Yep. And I know it wasn't very popular, but we got three really good players. We kind of took off after that, and I know a lot of people want to put it on Nomar. It had nothing to do with it, but yeah, just if you look at both sides, I think you'll understand what I'm getting ready to say. Like in big moments, you don't appreciate them because it's your job. Like I wish I could have sat back and took it all in back then. You know, you look at both sides, Yankees and Red Sox, think about how many Hall of Famers are on both sides. You know, some should be in my opinion. Some of the greatest baseball, you come down here, Pedro, Roger Clemens on a Saturday, Schilling against Messina. It was just, the A-Rod, it was just an amazing time. I know Kevin said don't let us win one, but be honest, like, we knew it was going to be almost an impossible task, and to pull it off was amazing.
What have you, I'm sure you kind of keep track with Jason and everything else of this team that, I don't want to make comparisons because it's too early for that, but they trade Rafi Devers. They have kind of a vibe to them, a youth movement.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that and feeling that from afar?
Yeah, I moved back to Hingham last September, so I'm here.
You're around.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. All and right. So,
nice.
So I'm around, more than normal. So I watch a lot. But you said there's this vibe.
Yep.
And, again, you don't want to just – again, it wasn't Nomar's fault. It wasn't Devers' fault. But there's a culture difference, you know what I mean? And these kids are – Alex Bregman's one of the best teammates, one of the best guys. He's really drugged these guys along. But, yeah, this is what's going to happen. They're young, they're athletic, and extremely talented.
Your style of pitching, I mean, I remember because it was so
– different.
It was. Yeah. I mean, I just remember, everybody just grounded out when D'Lo was on the mound. Like, your style of pitching, how would it work today?
I don't know if I threw hard enough. You know, like Bellows, a sinker ball guy, but he's 95, 96. You know, I don't know if 88 to 90 would be successful. And I know the strike zone's gotten, in my opinion, a little bit smaller. You know, back when we played, we didn't have the K zone.
Right. Yeah.
So if you came into Fenway Park, the strike zone was going to be –
well, and
huge.
A pitch clock and everything else that's changed.
And so that's a great question. I know for a fact, I would not have gotten drafted. You know, I threw 82 to 84 miles an hour in high school. That has no chance of playing now. But I think they're trying to evolve more ground ball pitchers. But great question. I wouldn't have got drafted. I know that.
Two of the best and most effective pitchers of that of your era, though, like Maddox never hit over 89.
Yeah.
And he was an absolute artist up there.
Yeah.
And your closer, Keith Foulke.
Yeah.
It was either 82 or 90, like or 78 or 90. Like he was amazing the way he was.
But it's interesting when you say that, you can take the Glavins. Again, I'm throwing myself in elite company. But we didn't really get hurt back then. You know what I mean? I was very fortunate to play 17 years, never on the DL.
Wow, that's amazing.
But now you look at these guys. I mean, your arm's not meant to – you're not meant to throw 95 to 100 miles an hour.
Right.
Something at some point is going to break. And you can go from a lot of different things. All sports have gotten bigger, faster, stronger. There's nothing you can do about it. But, yeah, I think just then we threw a little bit slower, and it didn't take the wear and tear in your arm like these guys do nowadays.
Yeah, you sound like – people used to make fun of Dick Raddatz when he was on this station.
Yeah.
In my day, we throw 150 pit. You got a little of the old man in my day.
I don't like saying that, too. I know. It dates you, but
I will also say,
true, though. Yeah.
I actually got Alex Cora to admit that he thinks that the radar guns might be fluffed up a little. Everybody throws 100.
You
got guys throwing like 104. Mm-hmm. So I think you might, if you used a gun today, you might gain a little something.
I've heard some of that, but, when you come to the game, I mean, they're throwing light years different than we are. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't personally, when I watch, I mean, Chapman's throwing 100. I'm sorry, whenever I watch that, that is
that's a real 100.
That's a real 100 miles an hour.
He's a very large person.
Huge.
Yeah, my God.
Intimidating.
Look how big you are. And it's always so funny that when you meet people that have never met you before, right. First thing everyone always says is, wow, you guys are a lot taller than I thought you were. Because TV doesn't do any sport justice. Right. Like you meet Crochet. I mean, he's 6'7", 250. But you would never know it, right?
Mm-hmm. Lucas Giolito walked off the midday show, and I was like, good Lord.
Yeah, Giolito was an giant.
Yeah.
Legs and
boost. Your sport is a completely different animal.
Yeah. Funny, when people meet me, I'm shorter than they expect. That's a whole different thing.
What are your thoughts on just the makeup and the abilities of Garrett Crochet?
What a great trade, obviously. You know, we're looking for, you know, we've been fortunate throughout the years to kind of have an ace. I know we've maybe in the last 3 or 4 years we didn't have one. Amazing trade. You know, Boston always needs a superstar ace, and we got one. Great deal. You know, financially to get him where he needs to be for the next, I think, 6-7 years. So they're going to keep adding on, trust me, you know, but, you know, this year is gone a lot better, I think, people thought originally, you know, because of the youth movement. Yeah. And, you know, you always got to win at home because Fenway is such a huge home field advantage, and they've been able to do that all year.
Do you still ever get a chance to do any Dana-Farber, Jimmy Fund-related activities?
I haven't yet, but I would love to. You know, like I said, we just got kind of back into the fold.
Yep.
I'm lucky enough to do PR stuff here for the Sox. I do about 20, 25 games a year, which I love. Keeps
but
me
that's
around.
A connection, too, because it's all
100%.
One big family.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, again, I love it because the longer we get, the longer we're removed from playing, the better we got.
Before we before we let you go, we had Brian Baio earlier, Willie Abreu, and they were talking about they want to experience Fenway Park in a playoff series.
Oh, yeah.
We've gotten a little sampling, I think.
Yeah.
These Friday nights have been pretty electric, but what would you tell them about October playoff Fenway is like?
I hope they do. And, again, I can't sit here and say it's electric and all that because it is cliche, but it really is. There's an atmosphere. You know, they're standing up in the first inning with two strikes, the leadoff batter. But it's a lot your first time. Yeah. You know, your adrenaline's going through the roof. You know, it takes time, I think, to able to settle down and calm down. But hopefully this is the year, and we'll be able to watch them this year.
All right, Derek, we appreciate you joining us. Derek Lowe, former Red Sox pitcher, world champion, back in the area, busting balls for Jason Veritek.
Yeah.
You got a lot going on. WEEI Afternoons rolling along. Up next, we'll talk to former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer, and we'll have a little announcement about him maybe joining the WEEI Afternoons family. The Jimmy Fun Radio Telethon here at Fenway Park rolls along.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
WEEI Afternoons back here, Fenway Park, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, Ted Johnson at the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Telethon brought to you by Arbella. If you're watching on Twitch, you see the tote board. We will update you. It's $3,925,156. It's a lot, but it's not enough. We are not done. We are churning along towards 6 o'clock. We would love to get over $4 million before we leave the air today. So you can go online. You can go to jimmyfund.org. You can call 877-738-1234, or you can text any amount to KCANCER to 56512. We're very excited at our next guest. We've been excited about all our guests. It's been a great day here at the telethon. But our next guest is former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer. And he is a guy that not only is he joining us today here at the Jimmy Fund Telethon, but I believe we're going to talk to him every Tuesday all season long. And I think if you're excited about Patriots season and you're intrigued with Drake May and Josh McDaniels in the offense, there is no better expert to talk to on a weekly basis than Brian Hoyer. What's up, Brian?
Brian, what's up, buddy?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're doing good, man. I concur everything that you said. I got a chance to work with you on NBC Sports Boston last year, and I loved your analysis, man. I told these guys we got to get B. Hoyer on every week if we can, because he tells it like it is, and we got a young quarterback in Drake May that we're going to need an expert analyst like yourself who played the position to kind of help us guide us through the season with him. And so we'll start off there as our first question, Brian. Just You know, I'm trying to figure out. I call the kid special. I think he's got special traits and abilities. But it just there's just enough evidence out there that would make you pause a little bit, at least so far in this training camp and preseason. How are you feeling so far in two preseason games and all of training camp? What you've seen from Drake May? What do you think about the kid and where he's at in his process of becoming hopefully a franchise quarterback here?
Yeah, I'm excited about Drake, and a lot of it is because of what I saw last year and the attitude that the kid has, and you'd see him get up there and at 21 years old, how he handled himself, how he endeared himself to his teammates. I thought he handled it great, and from watching him last year, you didn't really see him make the same mistake twice, and that to me is a sign of someone who's self-motivated to just continue to improve. And once I saw Josh was coming back, I thought it was one of the best things that could happen for him. Josh is going to put him through the course on how to be not just the quarterback, but the leader of the team and the coach on the field. And so there's a lot probably being thrown at him. I've been there before, and I've been there as a veteran in the room when Josh is throwing a lot at a rookie. I was there with Mac Jones his rookie year. And so he's going to throw the whole book at him. And you have to understand, too, training camp is for installation. And when you talk about installation in this system, there's a lot that's going in. Now, as they start to get ready for that first week of the season, things really start to narrow themselves down and really start to get to that game plan mode. And so during training camp, you basically are running the entire playbook. Now, when you go into week one and you're playing Las Vegas, you're going to say, okay, what does their defense do? What do we feel good about attacking their defense? Where are their weaknesses? Where are their strengths? How are we going to handle Max Crosby? All of those things are going to start to be taken into account for and really kind of narrow the target, so to speak. And so, I was at that night practice they did in the stadium, and one of those drives, I saw a few plays where Drake was changing the play at the line of scrimmage. I saw him change the protection. I saw him see a blitz and get back in the shotgun and throw an out route to Stephon Diggs. And so that was the type of thing that I'm looking for. I know in the game there's been a few plays here and there. I know Vrabel called him out for a poor decision for fumbling, instead of just taking the sack. And that's a learning process. And so, yeah, we're all excited about him and his talents, but I think there are still going to be some of those moments.
Brian, what else have you seen on the offense that you've liked thus far this preseason? And have there been any things that have given you pause or perhaps a little preemptive concern in advance of that September 7th kickoff?
Well, I think like I just explained about Drake's undertaking of this new system, there's a lot of guys that are doing the same thing. And I think the one thing that I've really been excited about is Travion Henderson. I mean, this guy, I don't think I've seen in my 15 years of playing someone so explosive in the backfield once they get the football. And we saw that with the touchdown the other day against the Vikings. I mean, people will bounce off of this guy, and he's got elite speed. So I would imagine that he becomes a very big part of this offense, not just in the running game, but you've seen it in the passing
screens.
Game. I mean, obviously we're looking at, yeah, screens, but I'm looking at clips from Minnesota camp where he double moves the linebacker on our outside route and he goes 70 yards on the sideline. I mean, that's what we used to do with James White. And no offense to James, I think Travion's a little bit faster. So I think you're going to see him used in a lot of different ways. I really love the addition of, obviously, Diggs, Kyle Williams. But Matt Collins is a guy who I think is going to come up with a lot of big plays. And one of those reasons is he's a guy who can be involved in the run game as far as blocking the down safety, which is a huge – we've seen Julian do that over the years. We saw Jacoby Myers do that. It's a crucial part of the offense is having a guy who can go in there and do the dirty work and then be rewarded for it with some of these play-action passes.
Brian, you mentioned the challenges that Drake May faces because he's a young quarterback and because he's learning a new system with Josh McDaniels. What is the next layer of challenge, though, as a quarterback when your offensive line, you're not really sure who it's going to be, and it might be three rookies starting in front of you, and you're not really sure who all your targets are going to be? The wide receiver position is pretty much up in the air. So how much of an extra challenge is that for Drake?
Yeah, I think that's all going to come together. And like I said, once the target becomes more clear and they get to the preparation for the Raiders, I know I've been in the meeting before with Josh. He is going to take into account what the pass rush is like, what the coverage is like, and he's going to sit there with Drake and say, look, when I call these 10 to 15 plays, we aren't holding the ball. I mean, I sat in those meetings with Brady and Josh and Tom would say, on this play, it's 1-2-3 and the ball's out, and that's comes off of pre-snap reads. Are there formation kind of tells that will tell Drake, is it man or zone? So it really narrows down. And I know everyone's talking about this, you know, Josh talking in his helmet. I think Drake mentioned that as opposed to AVP. Josh is one of the, when you get a play call from Josh, not only are you getting the play call, he's reminding you of the notes that you went over during the week. Hey, on this play, we're thinking if it's man, we're going to go over here. And so Josh will use that to talk to Drake up until that cuts off, as long as he feels like he's giving him valuable information. And so I think, you know, obviously week one, you got Max Crosby. How are you going to handle that? Well, I would assume you get a hefty amount of chips from the running backs and tight ends and pass protection. You're not going to put Will Campbell on an island with one of the top pass rushers in the NFL. And so that's where a great player caller comes into account and helps, you know, the players out.
All right, Brian, appreciate you joining us today. That was just an appetizer. I hope you're looking forward to talking us all season long. I think we know one thing. It's going to be an interesting season. I don't know if it's going to be great, terrible, good, but it's going to be interesting. So we look forward to talking to you on a weekly basis, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Brian Hoyer, former Patriots quarterback. And
honestly, that's as good of quarterback analysis you're going to get in this town there.
There is no one more experienced in Josh McDaniel's system and what it, in different places with different teams. Like, some people will say, oh, McDaniel's with Brady. Well, he was with him in Vegas. Like, he knows the McDaniel system without Brady with different other options.
He mentions the fact, you forget, like, Mac and then the
Zap.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Oh, the whole thing. So, Brian Hoyer, appreciate you joining us today, and we'll talk to you all season long here on WEEI Afternoons. We have a great update today here on the Jimmy Fund Telethon from Fenway Park. We just had the tote board updated. If you're watching on Twitch, you see that number. It now starts with a 4. It's $4,019,329, but that's the good news. We wanted to be at $4 million before 6 o'clock. We're at $4 million before 5 o'clock, so let's be at least 4.1 or 4.2 million before we go off the air. Get greedy. Alex Cora said it about his baseball team last year and again this year. We're saying it with the Jimmy Fund Telethon. So please continue to help out. 4 million is not enough. You've heard all the stories from the families and the doctors. We'll continue to bring those to you. But go call 1-877-738-1234. Go online to jimmyfund.org or text any amount to KCancer at 56512. Hour number 4, WEEI Afternoons, is up next here at the Jimmy Fund Telethon.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.